Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Tuesday, the 30th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon today. Pat Moore will be your guest host. We'll also find out about the climbing wall at the Zach Gordon Youth Center with our guest, Dylan Miller. Ken Fix will be here to highlight tonight's film at the Planetarium, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Kathy Reddick from Juneau Jazz and Classics will be here with the news about their upcoming event, Singing in the Rain. Also, Karen Smolin, Career Technical Education Coordinator, will be here to talk about the after-school classes available to high school students that start next month. At Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog, isolated showers, and low temperatures around 46 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain in the afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Utah Governor Gary Herbert is hosting the 6th annual Native American Summit. Attendees of the two-day summit will address issues like education, economic development, housing, and health care. Tribal, state, and federal officials are expected to attend. 400 people are registered for the summit. It's part of building the government-to-government relationship between the state of Utah and Utah's American Indian tribes. The summit kicks off today in Salt Lake City, Utah. Meanwhile, New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez met with tribal leaders Monday. The New Mexico State and Tribal Leaders Summit addressed issues like education, job creation, and health care. This is Martinez's first tribal state summit since she took office in January. Her cabinet secretary of Indian Affairs, Arthur Allison, also participated in the event. State law requires the governor to meet with tribal leaders each year in a summit to address issues of concern. The Environmental Protection Agency is deciding what kind of pollution limits the Reed Gardner coal-burning power plant needs to meet to protect air quality for southern Nevada and neighboring states. The Moapa Paiute tribe is located near the plant. In comments to the EPA last week, Tribal Chairman William Anderson said people in Nevada would be a lot safer if the power plant had to meet the same kind of pollution limits that are similar to a plant in New Mexico.
The EPA in that region was able to go ahead and have them cut down their emissions 90%. For the Region 9 area here in the state of Nevada, they're trying to only reduce it to like 40%.
Anderson says the plant emits pollution, which impacts his tribe and residents in Nevada and neighboring states, and comes with health care costs.
Too many of our children here have asthma. Too many have respiratory illnesses. For some people that are close by, you know, it's dangerous to be outside. Some of our elders say they could feel their skin burn on certain days.
The plant was built in the 1960s. Plant owner NV Energy says pollution limits at the 40% level meet current Clean Air Act requirements and are more affordable. Native leaders in Canada have bid farewell to a popular Canadian politician. Jack Layton was the leader of the New Democratic Party, the official opposition party in Parliament. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, during his state funeral over the weekend, he was honored with an Aboriginal blessing.
Jack Layton had been battling cancer since 2010. Earlier this year, he entered the federal election campaign and took his party to its best result ever, replacing the Liberals as the official opposition party in the House of Commons. He died more than a week ago after announcing he had an unspecified cancer. More than 1,700 people attended his state funeral in Toronto. Thousands more watched the service on giant video screens. Among the dignitaries were Prime Minister Stephen Harper and former Prime Ministers Paul Martin and Jean Chrétien. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Sean Atlio, bestowed an Aboriginal blessing.
Jack, up high, Mitisk, Jack, up high, Mitisk, Jack, he shook up, ooh, shoes, these few words expressing a deep gratitude for the life of a great man, a man of the people.
Afterward, Atlio presented a white eagle feather to Layton's widow, Olivia Chow, explaining that it was the highest symbol of respect and friendship. Dozens of Canada's Aboriginal leaders were among those who had come to pay their respects. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this week in 2005, Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast. It devastated the United Houma Nation in Louisiana. Less than a month later, Hurricane Rita hit the tribe. Thousands of tribal citizens were directly impacted and many displaced. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Well, good afternoon. It's 5 minutes after 3. This is Pat Moore. I'm here in the studio with Dylan Miller. And Dylan is the manager of the rock climbing wall at Zach Gordon Youth Center. Good afternoon, Dylan.
Hello.
Dylan, you're here to talk about, I think, a special program that's coming up at the Zach Gordon Youth Center involving the climbing wall. But I was interested in maybe a little background on you. You manage the climbing wall, and I wondered how you got into doing that kind of work.
Well, I have a deep passion for rock climbing. It's my main hobby in life at the moment, said school and work. And I climbed on and off with my dad for years and just got really into it starting last year, September. And, yeah, I've been climbing every day since.
So do you climb on the wall and then do you climb outdoors as well?
Yes, I do both.
So where does one go rock climbing around the Juneau area?
There are cliffs, sea cliffs is what we call them, out the road by 34 Mile, and they're down on the beach. It's kind of a hidden trail, so if you don't, there's blogs online, the JunoRockClimbing.com for directions.
Okay, so people who might be interested in rock climbing outdoors. Now, if someone wants to climb on a climbing wall in Juneau, I think there's three places that you can do that.
Yes.
Is that right?
There's the Zach Gordon Youth Center, the Rock Dump, and the UAS Rec Center.
Now, are those facilities different from each other in any particular way?
Yes. The Zach Gordon Youth Center is free for people under 21 to climb, and Rock Dump is, yes, for everyone, all ages, and it's $13 for a day pass, and at UAS, I think it's $5 to climb there, and if you're a student, it's free.
Okay, so but people who aren't students at UAS can pay to use the one out there. So if someone goes rock climbing, can you kind of describe a wall rock climbing in one of these places? Can you kind of describe what they do
when they're climbing?
Well, you know, the whole process of I think you're wearing a rope and a harness and like that. Okay.
There's two types of climbing. There's bouldering, which is ropeless, and short moves, not very high off the ground, about 15 to 20 feet off the ground. And then there's sport climbing, which is rope climbing high off the ground, like ranging from 20 to 40 to 50 or higher, depending on how tall the wall is.
Do we have a 40-foot high wall in Juneau?
Yes, we do, at the Rock Dome.
At the Rock
Dome.
There are
40-feet walls.
So if I were going to do this, I'd be wearing a harness of some kind?
Yep.
Would you, as the manager, you'd put that on me and get it adjusted? Is that how that works?
Well, we would show you how to put on your harness, make sure it's doubled back, that way it doesn't come loose, and how to tie into the rope and how to belay.
Okay, and then, so now I'm standing in front of the wall with my harness on and there's somebody holding the belay rope. And what do I do next?
Then you're ready to climb. You let the belayer know that you're ready and make your way up the wall.
Okay. And when you make your way up the wall, what are you using, your fingers and your toes and little like?
Yep. It's mostly finger strength, upper body strength. It's special shoes that we use to grip the holds. It's like a sticky rubber kind of. And, yep, it's mostly finger strength. Some holds can be small. There's very different styles of climbing holds ranging from slopers to small edges we call crimps and pinches.
You're describing the little cuts
right.
in the wall. Okay,
yep.
So those have names like slopers. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I see. Okay. And so now when I'm up the wall or something like that, if I start to slip or something like that, how do I keep from falling off the wall?
Well, it's mostly people think it's mostly strength to pull yourself up, but it's actually a technique of using your feet. It's all if your feet are solid and they're staying on the wall, then your body is more secure. It's definitely all in your feet.
So now, say that my feet and my hands kind of go wobbly and I fall away from the wall. How do I keep from hurting myself?
Your belayer catches you. Oh. And we use, at the Rock Dump and the Zach Gordon, we use a belaying device called the Grigory. It's automatically locking, so the belayer isn't holding all the pressure of the climber on his hands. On the rope, it's
So once my weight hits the rope, then that thing clicks in. And,
yes.
Okay. So now the program that you're talking about, I believe starts when? Is the one for the elementary students.
It starts September 6th,
okay.
And each school will have their own day of the week to climb.
And which schools have this?
Harborview. Starting with Harborview. Harborview starts September 6th. At 3 p.m. till 7, and then Gastineau starts September 7th, which is Wednesday, from 3 p.m. to 7 as well, and the community charter school will start on Fridays from September 9th from 3 p.m. to 7.
So is this like every week for how long?
For months.
The fall term, basically,
yeah.
Or something like that. Okay. And how do students get involved in this? In other words, this is an after-school program. How does a parent go about seeing that their student gets in if they're interested?
Well, we'll hand out flyers to the teachers, and they can pass those to the students. And hopefully, if they're into climbing or want to know something more about climbing, they'll come down and with their parents and climb for free.
So if a parent were interested in having their child take this up, could they contact the Gordon Youth Center directly?
Yes.
What phone number would they call?
Phone number is 586-0463.
Now, would that get them to you? Would you be the person who'd answer that?
Would direct it to the front desk, and they could just ask for me,
and I'll
be close.
Would they need to ask for you? Could they enroll in the program if you weren't there for some reason?
No, the front desk will help
them.
So
they'll get to you?
Yes.
In other words, one way or another. Okay. Now, this is for students in grades what?
Kindergarten through fifth grade.
Okay. And the students would come, and you'd be supervising them. Their parents are asked to come with them
yep.
whenever they can, so that they can belay for their child.
Yep. And I would teach the parents how to belay and
okay.
tie the climber into the rope correctly.
Now, let's say we have a first grader. Okay,
uh-huh.
We have this first grader in the harness and everything like that, and you're showing them how high up the wall is that child probably going to go for the first few climbs.
It takes a while to get used to the height. A lot of the younger kids will probably climb halfway up, look down, and then they'll get spooked, and then they'll want to come down, and then they'll be like, "Oh, it wasn't that high," you know. So they'll try again.
So the idea here, I think, is to make this fun and
yes.
and to keep from getting scared.
Yeah, it's very fun
yeah.
and safe.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think that we understand the program. It runs from September 6th for Harborview students, from September 7th for Gastineau students, and starting September 9th for charter school students. The wall is available to that particular school from 3 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're not in one of those three schools and you're interested in using the Gordon rock climbing wall, Did they just call and say, and when is it available?
Or show up. I work there weekly, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 3 to 7. So, but you can show up, yeah, anytime between then and climb. If you're under 21, it's free.
Okay. And there's someone there who can get you set up if you show up on a Monday or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay. Good, wonderful. Dylan, thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about this program that I might have not asked you about?
It's free, just to let everyone know that again. And there are no special skills or climbing accessories required.
You provide all the equipment.
We provide the harnesses, the ropes.
How about the special shoes?
The special shoes we have almost every size.
Okay.
And for real small toddlers, we have some shoes, but kind of limited pairs, like 3 or 4. So if they have a stiff tennis shoe, that would be wise to wear, sandals.
Just in case they didn't have a shoe that fits. So you'd want a closed-toed tennis shoe.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing. Okay, like a running shoe or something.
Right.
Like that. Yeah, good. Okay. Dylan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming down and telling us about this.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Our next guest is Ken Fix. We're playing a little bit of Marvin Gaye to kind of say something about that climbing program at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Ken is the program director at the Marie Drake Planetarium here in Juneau, which I was just talking with him before we came online here. You've just incorporated and become now it's a corporation?
Well, we've had to incorporate as a nonprofit organization, because we are pursuing a grant from the Rasmussen Foundation in order to replace the 1967 Spitz star ball, which is the centerpiece of the planetarium, with a digital star ball. So if we do happen to succeed with Rasmussen for the grant, then we'll be able to upgrade the system and put in a state-of-the-art system into the planetarium that we have.
This is exciting. The Spitz Star Ball now. Can you give us a little background on that instrument?
Well, it actually started out as a German company, and then a company in Pennsylvania bought the rest of it.
Uh-huh.
But it uses old analog technology, so you actually have a sphere that has holes in it where an intense light that's inside shines out and creates the night sky constellations on the planetarium dome.
And this new instrument, if you can get it, is going to do that how?
Well, it'll project everything digitally, so there won't actually be like pinholes in the ball like we have right now. So it'll project everything digitally. We'll be able to zoom in on planets and constellations and also import programs that have been done in other areas of the country as far as, you know, as well as producing our own programs.
So does the manager position, are you responsible for cleaning out the pinholes?
Well, actually, nobody really has to do that. The way they're constructed, it's they get very little dirt on them. And plus, the planetarium star ball has a motorized assembly that brings it up for showings, and then it goes down into basically like a well with a cover on top of it when it's not in use.
So we don't lose a star due to a little speck of dirt or something like that.
Hopefully not, but I don't count them to make sure. But that's the idea.
Wow. Okay, so now this coming, or tonight actually, you're planning on showing a movie in the planetarium.
Yes, this is the last of the summer series that I came up with, which was retro sci-fi movies.
Uh-huh.
We'll repeat that again this next summer. It seems like everybody leaves town and nobody's around. So once we start our educational programming in the fall and then go through late spring, most of the people are here in town. But it seems like the summertime is kind of bad. Everybody wants to be outside while the weather is nice or even close to nice. And so we halt the educational programming. And I decided to do that just to keep the interest going in the planetarium once per month. We started this summer with what was the one I did? Them was last month's showing. And then the first one was This Island Earth, which we did in June.
And what are you doing tonight?
Tonight's movie is The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's probably one of the most iconic science fiction movies that's been made and certainly a good representative for the 1950s era that I'm trying to cover.
So if we go, do we have to remember to say Klaatu Barada Nikto from the audience on the right?
Only if you want to stop the robot from incinerating you. That's pretty much how that worked. But you know, I'm kind of giving away a little bit. But most everybody's seen this movie anyways. It's nice, though, to be able to project it large on the planetarium dome and also pump the sound through our stereo system that's there in the planetarium.
So now the movie that you're showing is the 1951 black
and white version.
Oh, yes,
the 1951 with Michael Rennie and Patricia Neal, yes.
Not the 2008 remake.
Well, I wasn't particularly fond of that. It looked a little bit better, but the story fell a little bit flat. The message was a little bit different, and
yeah.
I think that the fact that they had actually in 1995, the National Film Registry had selected it for preservation as a culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant movie is another one of the reasons why it's one of the ones that I picked.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a very strong message, core message against armed conflict, which at the height of the Cold War was actually something that the producers wanted to get across to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the science fiction medium as the way to get that across. I do have a few other more interesting stories about the movie that most people wouldn't know.
So will you be talking about the movie at the showing?
A little bit.
Uh-huh.
One of the interesting facts I found out is that an architect named Frank Lloyd Wright,
which
you may have heard of.
Yeah.
In addition to designing over 400 residential and commercial buildings, including the Guggenheim Museum in New York, he was also the designer, at least in part, for the spacecraft that was in The Day the Earth Stood Still. So he's got 400 buildings plus a flying saucer. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I never knew that, but when I started doing research for the movie, I found that one out.
That's outstanding. I didn't know that. Now, on your website, it says hard chairs are available. But
yes, we have those metal folding chairs, but this is really loose. You can bring folding chairs, whatever you've got, blankets, and lay down under the stars. And, well, I probably won't have the stars on, but, you know, you get the idea. So it's very informal. It's not like when we do our fall presentations and we have everybody in the seats.
But you're actually watching the movie up over your head.
Well, it's projected onto a section of the dome. It really isn't like vertically, so
okay.
You strain your neck looking at it.
You're not lying down. You're
no.
Okay.
You can and prop your head up with something if you've got something there, but this is very informal.
But people can bring anything that they're comfortable with sitting or lying on for a two-hour movie.
Certainly, yeah. Actually, it's a little over 90 minutes.
Also, the website said that you had healthy popcorn for a dollar.
Healthy popcorn is the air-popped variety.
Ah, okay.
But I will also have some unhealthy variety since I'm sort of ramrodding the show tonight. Our main presenters... Which is Steve and his wife are out of town, so I'm kind of leaning towards some unhealthy popcorn tonight, which I will also have.
Good enough. Now, it says if you wear a costume, you get free popcorn.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's a costume that relates somehow to this movie. Is that
Be nice, but I'll take anything.
Okay. So Halloween plus. But if you can come as Klaatu, then we'll let you.
Well, his outfit was just sort of like a big jumpsuit with a helmet. But,
it really was, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose you can just about bring anything, and that would work.
When the educational programs start up again, when will that be?
That'll be in September. The first one I won't be doing, but I will resume my mythology and astronomy presentations in October with Cronus and Saturn.
Okay.
So I left off with Zeus and Jupiter back in April, and I'm going to do Cronus and Saturn starting up in October.
And September, what is the opening date?
Not quite sure what presentation we're running, but it will be the last Tuesday in September.
The last Tuesday in September. Okay. And if someone wants, do you need to make reservations or anything?
No. We, I think the biggest capacity crowd we have is generally right before Christmas time, and we had a little over 80 people.
Okay.
The last two showings for movies at the Planetarium, we've basically had about 36 people or so. So we've got plenty of room for people to come in.
What's the best way for someone to find out that there's a Planetarium show coming up and that it will be on a particular night?
Well,
do you have a website?
We do have a website. It's www.mariedrakeplanetarium.com.
Okay.
And we'll usually have the month's events are posted there.
I noticed that if you just Google Planetarium Juno, it pops right up. So it seems to be a quick way.
That's really nice. Then we don't have to hunt and peck all over the place to find it.
Okay. Anything else you can tell us about the Planetarium?
Well, first off, I would like to thank the Lions Club for donation of the projector for us. So we now have a projector that works with a laptop because that's the way we're delivering our shows right now with PowerPoint.
The movies you're talking about, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, the movies definitely are coming off a laptop.
Right. Okay. Ken, thank you very much for coming down and talking with us about
this.
We're looking forward to it. And Klaatu Barada Nikto, don't open your visor.
Everybody show up tonight and go to see The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original one.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 30th of August, 2011. It's the birthday of the Russian journalist Anna Stepanova, Politikovskaya, author of Putin's Russia and A Small Corner of Hell, Dispatches from Chechnya. Anna Politikovskaya was born in New York City, 1958, her parents Ukrainian diplomats at the UN. But she grew up in Moscow, went to the State School of Journalism, and she became a fearless reporter trying to speak for the victims of conflict even in the face of great personal risk. She started out at the Russian newspaper Izvestia, then to Novaya Gazeta, an investigative newspaper, where she was highly critical of Vladimir Putin, the former KGB lieutenant colonel who had become the second president of the Russian Federation. She wrote that under him, Russia was, quote, hurtling back into a Soviet abyss, into an information vacuum that spells death from our own ignorance. If you want to go on working as a journalist, it's total servility to Putin. Otherwise, it can be death, the bullet, poison, or trial, whatever our special services, Putin's guard dogs, see fit. She reported on the Second Chechen War, describing what she called state versus group terrorism, documenting torture, mass executions, kidnappings, the sale by Russian soldiers of Chechen corpses to their families. In 2001, in the course of investigating punitive raids by the Russians on Chechen families, she was detained by Russian military officials who beat her and threatened her children and staged a mock execution of her with a rocket launcher. She received numerous death threats. In 2004, she was poisoned with a cup of tea. And on the afternoon of October 4, 2006, she returned to her central Moscow flat with a load of bags and parcels, dropped the bags in her apartment, took the lift back down, and as the doors opened, she was shot 4 times in the chest, once in the head, at point-blank range. Anna Stepanova Politkovskaya, she was 48 years old. It's the birthday of John Gunther, the American journalist, born Chicago, 1901, famous for his Inside books. The first was Inside Europe, 1936. Inside USA, published in 1947, in which he described the United States as the craziest, most dangerous, least stable, most spectacular, least grown-up, most powerful and magnificent nation ever known. And it was on this day in 1963 the diplomatic hotline between Moscow and Washington went into service, a pair of telegraph lines connecting a system of teletype machines with cryptography units on each end. American teletypes installed in the Kremlin, East German teletypes installed in the Pentagon. Here's a poem for today by Robert Morgan, Great Day in the Morning. My father, when he was surprised or suddenly impressed, would blurt, Great day in the morning, as though a revelation had struck him. The figure of his speech would seem to claim some large event appeared at hand, if not already here, a mighty day, or luminous age, was flinging wide its doors as world on world revealed their wonders in the rapturous morning, always new, beginning as the now took hold. Great Day in the Morning by Robert Morgan from his collection Terroir, published by Penguin Poets and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
As a parent, you're probably aware of the advantage of homeschooling, but what type of program is best for your student? You might consider Homebridge, a program associated with the Juneau School District that offers involvement in school district programs like sports and other extracurricular activities. Another Homebridge advantage is the allowance of up to 2 classes at a local high school with no allotment reduction. Your student can learn at their pace and still be connected to friends in the school district. Call 209-HOME.
It's 3:30 and you're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Pat Moore. I'm guest hosting for Jeff today. And my guest right now is Kathy Reddy, who is chairman of the board for the Juneau Jazz and Classics program. And Kathy's going to talk to us about a couple of programs that are coming up, one in October and one in just a couple of 3 days, and then a special opening of registration that happens on the 1st of September. Good afternoon, Kathy.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So you've moved the program of Singing in the Rain.
Barney McClure Cabaret.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what that program is?
Right. This is a wonderful cabaret workshop for shower singers or for experienced singers, too. We have a limit of 30. Barney McClure is an extraordinary jazz accompanist who's also a gifted supporter, nurturer of singing. And he has been with us, I think this will be our 7th cabaret. Barney has now taken over as the executive director of a jazz festival down in Washington, and we can no longer have him as we've had in the past, January, February. So we're moving to October, and this year the cabaret workshop opens on Sunday, October 9th. And goes every evening that week until the culmination concert, which is Friday night, October 14th.
So now Barney McClure plays piano, right?
That he does.
And if someone is interested in this program, they come in, and what happens? You said you'd done it a few times yourself?
Yes. Yeah. We ask you to bring a couple pieces of music with the sheet music, if possible, and then at your first session with Barney, you sing both of them, and then between the two of you, you consult. Barney is wonderful at making singers shine. He's just good at that. And so the best piece of music is chosen, and then it's worked on all week long, and then it's sung on Friday night, October 14th this year, in front of an adoring crowd of your friends and neighbors.
So how many people can take the workshop? How many slots?
We're limited to 30, and registration opens day after tomorrow.
Day after tomorrow,
on
September 1st.
Correct.
And they go on the website to register? Is that
correct?
Is that how you do it? You just sign a form up there or something like that? Is there a cost for this?
Yes, it's $125 for the five-night workshop.
Okay.
And you can also call Sandy Fortier, our executive director, or drop by the office at the Jack. But most people find it convenient to sign up online.
And you have to wait until September 1st.
September 1st.
To do the sign-up. Okay.
Right.
The slots go, I think, pretty fast.
They go pretty fast.
So at what time of day, what's the earliest someone could actually sign up and make it qualify? 12:01 on the first on the website.
Oh, my gosh. We've never been asked this before. Yeah. I'm assuming that by early morning, before your first cup of coffee on September 1st, if you want, it should be ready.
So if you really want to get a slot, you need to be on this right at the first part of the day. And last year, I think this thing sold out in one day.
We did sell out very fast, and we're just thrilled that people value Barney and are so nurtured and supported by his you know, his skills.
Now, if you sign up for this and then October 14th gets here, that's the concert, but that week of October. So you would work with Barney at what time? Is this during the day or during the evening?
No, this is evening.
Okay.
And there are two. Our Sunday night, October 9th, is all 30 singers come together. But then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night, we have an early class, which I think is 5:30 to 7:30, and then we have a late class, which is 8 to 10. Don't hold me to this exact. But
depending on your schedule, you have a little flexibility as to when you would...
You choose the early class or the late class.
Okay.
And then during the week, your fee also entitles you to a private lesson with Barney.
Oh, okay.
During the week where we schedule
him. Arrange that with him. And,
yeah.
So he's basically here for that whole week, and you can...
He's here for the whole week for the singers.
Okay. So that's the first big deal, is to get signed up for this if you want to engage in that on the 14th. But you also have a concert coming up. Is that right?
Yes. We have a very big concert on Labor Day, which is Monday. We have two extraordinary and world-class musicians, Zul Bailey, cellist, who's also just taken over from Paul Rosenthal as the artistic director of the Sitka Summer Music Festival, Zul Bailey, and Awadajan Pratt, the pianist who came and played for Jazz and Classics at our 25th festival just 5 months ago. And they are an extraordinary team. They have known each other since music school days. They're very good friends. And their CD has just... what do you say about CDs? Gangbusters, selling like hotcakes. It's a very, very popular CD. And we're really thrilled to have them join us, and especially for Labor Day. It's 4:00 in the afternoon. Hopefully nobody's working that day. And it's out at the university with that wonderful piano in the library, UAS Egan Library. There's plenty of parking, and it's just going to be a wonderful concert.
That concert starts at what time?
It starts at 4:00 this Monday, Labor Day.
4:00 in the afternoon, probably a couple of hours thereabouts.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And again, now, how would there's a fee, I'm sure.
Yes.
And how do people get tickets to be in the
usual outlets, Hearthside, the Jack, or online, jazzandclassics.org. And we're not sold out. You know, we may be, so don't wait. And they're playing the complete works of Brahms and for cello and piano.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And that concert now is part of the cooperation, I think, that kind of is ongoing between Juno Jazz and Classics and the university.
The university has nurtured us from the very beginning, mm-hmm. More than 25 years ago or 26 years ago now. They've nurtured us from the beginning, and we are very grateful to them for that. And their ongoing support every year culminates in the Community Day on campus, which is the Saturday. I'm not sure the exact date this coming up year, but we have more than 1,000 people on the campus. So the Arts and Humanities Council co-sponsors the UAS, and we have lots and lots of music, high school, even middle school, and then we have pony rides and touch tanks and bottle rockets. It's a huge community event, and mm-hmm. it just exemplifies our partnership with the university.
Kathy, the big event for Juno Jazz and Classics is, of course, the week-long music festival. It's a week, I think, right?
We've been 10 days for many years, and last year we went to 3 weekends, which we hoped will pull people from out of town, which it has, and we've decided again to go for 3 weekends. And so next year we begin May, I believe it's May 4th to May 19th, but it's on our website. Mm-hmm. So that's that will be our 26th annual festival.
Okay. And do we know who the stars are going
to
be?
No, Linda Rosenthal has not revealed who, if she's chosen yet, she hasn't revealed. And, but the lineup will be posted on the website as soon as it's finalized.
Can people, I know you're supported by a kind of a subscription, the ticket costs, and you also have members as well. How does someone become a supporter of your?
Well, we take contributions. We send out a letter in the fall where we ask for people to contribute, and we get a huge outpouring of support that way. That's the best way to support us.
Okay, and then, again, the website is the place to go for all of these
things.
Okay, so September 1st is sign up for the Singing in the Rain workshops.
Right.
September 5th is the concert at 4 o'clock up on campus.
Labor Day.
And October 14th is the concert with Singing in the Rain. The week before that is the workshop series. And then in May of next year, we all expect 3 weekends of wonderful jazz and classics.
You've got it. Many thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for coming down and talking with us, Kathy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's 3:45, and you're listening to Juno Afternoon. This is Pat Moore. I'm guest hosting for Jeff today. My guest is Karen Smolin, who is the Career Technical Education Coordinator with the Juno School District. Good afternoon, Karen.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks.
I think you've been here a few times before, but not with me, I don't think. So we'll kind of stumble through this together, I guess. Can you start by telling us a little bit about the Career Technical Ed program and how it fits into the school curriculum for students?
Sure. Basically, they are electives for students to take at the high school level. And what we've worked on in the last couple of years is building kind of career pathways at each of our high schools that kind of group like programs together and encourage students to look at taking a full sequence of courses that might be in a particular area, such as construction or architecture, even health sciences or culinary. And so a student could choose to specialize in their high school experience, or they could choose to try different things to see what their interest could be or might be. And what the high school system has adopted is an endorsement program, where if a student took so many courses in a pathway, they could earn that recognition on their high school transcript. And it shows, you know, some serious study and focus for some students that choose to do that.
So does a student, you said the word electives, does that mean that the student takes these courses during the school day or these after-school classes, or how does that fit into the time?
It could be both. Typically, the courses are offered during the school day, but we also have a lot of opportunities that I'll highlight with you today about some of the after-school classes that we offer, which gives students more opportunity to fit things into their schedule when they have a lot of required classes and other interest classes that they need to take.
Are these programs, when you're talking about a career pathway, do the programs all happen as part of the school, or do you cooperate with businesses? Are there internships or that sort of thing involved in this?
Well, those are really good questions. Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay, we can file that away.
there are many courses that we offer in our school system that have alignment with University of Alaska system courses, such as some construction trades classes, whether it's Creative Woods or Basic Construction or even Metals 1, a student could get dual credit. They could earn their high school credit, and they could pay for a very nominal fee of $75 and earn 3 university credits for certain classes.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, so that's one way. Same time, students could choose to take classes at the university and bring those transcripts back, or, you know, build their experience that way. Then there are opportunities for internships that are typically like a capstone course or experience for students after they've kind of gotten their feet wet with an interest area.
So how does a student become involved with this program? In other words, when you're starting the school year, does somebody come and say, okay, you could take this course if you wanted to?
Well, it's typically during the registration process, which for high school students is sometime in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's always some modifications that happen at the start of the school year. So those choices are made, and the promotion of courses and programs happen typically at the registration time. So a student is making those decisions about the various courses they're taking to graduate high school, meet the graduation requirements, as well as their own personal interests and what they may be planning for beyond high school.
Okay, but you and I are talking a week after school has started.
Correct.
So what if a student listening to us now says, gee, I didn't know about that. Is there any way that student could get into these programs now?
Our after-school classes, yes. Certain classes, which I'd like to tell you about, maybe. Classes are full to shift, or maybe not full, but once a student's schedule is set, it can be quite challenging to all of a sudden rearrange first through sixth periods, depending on availability of other courses. So it's typical that students do not add or drop classes in their standard schedule of periods 1 through 6 after the first 5 days of school, and I believe the drop period or change add is coming up, or it may have passed.
I think it's already passed if it's
5 days. So that's one piece. But when we offer these special classes outside of the standard school day, then there's a little more creativity and flexibility for students to grab them. And
so can you tell us a little bit about those programs?
I'll jump into that and share with you. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of after-school classes that are going to be starting in September. So there's plenty of time for students to sign up for them right now. And one of them is basic construction. And it's scheduled to start September 20th and go through December. It's offered in a schedule of, say, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays from 4 to 6 p.m. So it's a nice schedule offering in a compressed way, where it's not every single day, but for a period of time. And a student basically at the same time could choose to earn university credit because it's a tech prep into a credit class.
This is one of the courses that you were talking about. Okay.
In that example. Mm-hmm. And it's offered at JD High. So we've been promoting it in the high school bulletins and encouraging students who are interested in many venues like today, or parents that hear about it can tell their kids about it, to consider signing up for the class. And all they have to do is call the Juno Douglas High School Counseling Office to get enrolled.
If my student were a TMHS student,
they can also take this class.
They can take this class.
Yes,
okay.
It's open to all high school students in the district. That's what's really sweet about these after-school offerings. And it's also sponsored by a grant that we have with the Juno Construction Academy. So it's been really an opportune time to expand offerings and opportunities for kids.
Yeah.
Another class that we are going to be offering, probably around the same schedule, I should know in a day, is a Woods class after school at Thunder Mountain High School.
And that Woods is what?
It's a intro to Woods class. It's
dealing
also,
with carpentry
and
that.
Yeah, carpentry,
okay,
yes.
Okay.
And basic skills of doing using hand tools and doing basic woodworking projects. And so that's another class that's going to be offered actually at Thunder Mountain High School.
But JDHS students could
that's
go
right.
out there.
That's right. Or Yakus Dakahiti students can also attend, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up. We also are offering an emergency trauma technician training, otherwise known as ETT.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another wonderful example. The class is sponsored by Gold Belt Heritage Institute and the Capital City Fire and Rescue. Actually, they're contract teachers who are EMT, ETT certified to teach it as a state level. You have to have a certain certification, are teaching that class for us, and it's free to all high school students. Again, you get ETT certification.
Yeah.
It's going to be offered starting September 12th through November 22nd, and it's a Monday through Thursday schedule, 5 to 7. This information is in all high school bulletins. The counseling offices have it. If students are interested, they can register through JD High School Counseling for ETT and the construction.
And there's probably a notice on the JD High School or the school's web pages?
I don't know if it's on the web pages. I know it's on the district website, I think, and it should be. Each counseling office has this information.
Okay.
So kids can go see the counselors or even the front desk, and they can take the sign up. The Thunder Mountain High School Creative Woods class will be registering at Thunder Mountain High School, and that information will be announced in the bulletins here in the next day.
Okay, Karen, you have something to do with the house build program as well?
Yes. The house build program is something that is offered through JD High, but we are opening it up to all high school students in the district who want to take it, and we can help get them there. What I wanted to share today is that, one, there's room in the house build class. We are planning on building a house this year. It's our third house that we're embarking on as a district. We just finished finishing the house that we built last year that was designed by one of our students. And we are just inviting kids who still may be on the fence or may have room in their schedule, because it's a unique schedule. It's periods 5 and 6 of the day. It's a block period, and they have to have room in their schedule. So it's typically an upperclassman, a senior more likely,
mm-hmm.
Who has room to take that class, and they get
this
a hand.
This one is not an after-school program. This
no,
is actually,
it's during the day.
Okay.
It's periods 5 and 6, which is typically after lunchtime. And
how many students can take the course? Is there a limit?
Well, a reasonable limit. We have 7 enrolled right now. I'd say 10 to 12 would be a max, only because it's not a big house we're building. It's about 1,000 square feet, and so there's only so much space and workspace to do that. But
where will it be?
Well, we're building it right next to the house we just finished. We have a piece of land on Lund Street in Lemon Creek, and it's right off of Central Avenue, and it's at the end of Lund Street. And the first house is just, like I said, being finished, and we're going to have an open house coming up on Friday, September 16th,
okay,
from 2:30 to 3:30 for the public, students, parents, community members, to come and check out the house that we just finished. The Juneau Housing Trust is going to be transferring it to an affordable, eligible home buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in partnership with them and the Southeast Alaska Guidance Association and many, many other partners in the community. But those are kind of the strong partners of building the house with us. And we're going to be doing that again starting in about, hopefully, 2 weeks or so. We're just finalizing our building plans and getting ready to build the second house. And we have a team of students ready to go. And
well, you're busy with all of these things. You also told me before we started that there are some high school open houses coming up.
Yes, there are. We have, and there are many open houses across the district, but I thought I'd highlight the high school ones. We have Thunder Mountain High School's open house is coming up this week. It's on Thursday, September 1st from 5:30 to 7. J.D. High's open house is on Thursday, September 8th from 6 to 7:30.
Wow. Thank you very much. It sounds like you're extremely busy with the school year. Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule today and coming down and talking to
us. Well, thank you.
Karen Smolin, thank you.
This is Bird Note. Why, when birds have such exceptional vision, do hundreds of millions die every year by slamming into glass windows? We called Christine Shepherd, who manages the Bird Collisions Campaign for American Bird Conservancy, to find out.
Birds don't see glass. And as I've started working on this problem, I've realized that people don't see glass either. But people understand context. They understand window frames. They understand right angles.
Christine and her colleagues are conducting research at Powder Mill Nature Reserve, about an hour from Pittsburgh, to discover patterns that, when applied to glass, can prevent collisions. They've constructed a 30-foot tunnel.
The birds are put in at one end, it's dark inside, and at the other end of the tunnel is two pieces of glass side by side. There's a mist net that keeps the birds from being injured. When they try to fly towards the plain glass, that squirt is avoiding the patterned glass.
So what patterns deter best?
This all boils down to spacing. And consistently we find that the little birds we're testing, the warblers and other passerines that are the most common victims of bird collisions, will not fly through a horizontal slot that is 2 inches or smaller, and they won't fly through a vertical slot that's 4 inches or smaller. So when they see a large space on a window, they don't consider that there's any barrier. But if they see lines that are providing the spacing, they'll fly around it instead of trying to fly through it.
To learn more about how you can help prevent bird collisions, begin at our website, birdnote.org.
Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay Area, tuned to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk to Eva's Dillingham and Alaska's Kid as they get ready for the Who's Your Diva event. Ellen Carley from the Alaska State Museum will be here to talk about their science gun demonstrations on Friday and Saturday. We'll talk with artists involved in the City Museum's Metamorphosis show. And stone sculptor Bob Kreutzner will be here to invite us to his first Friday reception at the Juneau Artist Gallery. At Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 46 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning and high temperatures around 59 degrees. Wednesday night looks like rain, possibly heavy at times. Rain predicted for Thursday and Friday. Looks like there's a chance of showers. The Anderson Music of Zool Bailey will be performing live in concert with Abadage and Pratt on Monday at Labor Day. Also will be featured in a special 6 p.m. broadcast on next Sunday with Larry West, conversation and music. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. Coming up next, All Things Considered. Thanks to Pat Moore, my guest host, for filling in today. We'll be able to hear him later on in the future. Thanks, Pat. Thank you.